Hello, everyone, and welcome in. Today, we are going to have the second part of ego and spirituality. For there are two voices within each of us, the voice of our ego and the voice of spirit. The one we listen to profoundly impacts our life for better or worse, right? This impact is reflected in the way we work with people, our relationships with those closest to us, our relationships with ourselves, our ability to achieve using our potential, our ability to grow our mind, deal with change, manage conflict, and deal with stress, and also our ability to know and live genuine happiness. An unconscious, imbalanced ego often shuts us down and screams out to us loudly through issues of power, flexibility. So many things happen when our ego is out of balance, and so that's really what we're going to be discussing today with our guests. I know you remember them, Linda Martin and her husband, Nick Martin, and they're going to come on a little bit later, and we're just going to discuss certain where we left off, really, the different personalities of some particular egos that can really impact us in this shift that we're going through. So that's going to be really exciting when we bring them on. But first, I want to remind you of a few things. And as you know, I have my website, Affirmations for Living, and it's all about affirming a positive way of living. It is indeed your birthright, isn't it, to live the life that you want with sole purpose, to prosper, to be happy. All of those things that we strive for each and every day, they are your God-given right. And my goal is to give you those tools to help you to empower yourself. So if you would, right now, just imagine that you could have the ability to create what it is you desire. So I want to let you know that starting April 7th, I'm going to have a webinar series called Raising Your Consciousness, and it is all about giving you those tools. It's a 5-week series. It's going to be live Sundays at 10 o'clock specific time, but it's going to have a replay, so you won't miss anything if you're not available. So sign up today, because each episode, each session is designed to cover another aspect of this process, raising your consciousness. What is consciousness, first of all? Does it matter? Why would I want to raise it? It's really important. Understanding what happens when you're not living the life you want. How do you connect to your soul purpose? How do you connect to your higher self? Even things like, you know, we say how important it is to be positive. Well, what happens when you're having a negative thought? So during the webinar, we're going to cover all of those things step by step and in detail. Also on the site, you know that, well, it is called Affirmations for Living, after all, because we do have affirmations available to you. And by the way, talking about affirmations, every Monday I send out free affirmations on my app, Awakened. So if you haven't downloaded it today, make sure you do so. It's a free download. It's called Awakened. And every Monday we send out free affirmations. For the next couple of weeks, we'll be sending out affirmations on being positive. Also available on the site, we have guided meditations, and I do one-on-one spiritual life coaching. So if you really want hands-on on learning how to meditate, learning how to find your soul purpose, or really just setting goals for yourself, I'm available in person, on Skype, and of course over the telephone. So visit me today at affirmationsforliving.net. And remember that change begins with a single thought. So what are you thinking today? Before we get started, I want to give you the telephone number. If you have any questions for Linda or Nick, please feel free to call in. That number is 323-203-0815. Again, that's 323-203-0815. You can send me a message or text, and I will receive it and ask those questions that you want answered. Here we go. Hello, everyone, and we are back. Yes, indeed, Affirmations for Living, and I am your host, Reverend Dr. Edvige. And once again, I am joined by Linda and Nick Martin, ego and spirituality, as it were. So excited to continue this conversation, because it really, really was really enjoyable the last time. So welcome in, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you very much for inviting us again.
Hi, Aziz. We're so happy to be here tonight.
Yay! Wonderful. And so, if you would, for those who did not hear the last show, just share with us a little background of who you are and the work that you're doing, because it's just so important.
I guess I'll take the lead on that one. I'm a psychologist that has been working in the Western Pennsylvania area for the past 30-some years. And over that time, I've had a chance to work in the clinical setting, mental health setting with many patients, adults and adolescents for the most part, as well as teaching at California University of Pennsylvania for the last 25 years, and have been working with serving rehabilitation counselors, who are people who are learning disabled and physically disabled in this region. And basically, over the course of that time, have served as a teacher, educator, diagnostician, clinician, and consultant. And all of this work together over the 30 years has led me in the direction of contemplating the design of the ego, if you would call it, the workings of the ego, and that has come about into the development of a couple of books that I've written along with Linda, The Ego Unmasked, and the latter book, Ego and Spirituality, The Consciousness of Ego Spiritualism.
And I'm Reverend Dr. Linda Martin, and I'm a metaphysician and a spiritual medium and spiritual healer. I have a ministry that I founded, Dove of Light Healing Ministry, in Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania, where I see clients and offer classes and workshops and just a lot of wonderful things to assist people on their life path and help them connect in a spiritual way to who they really are. And, the book that Nick and I wrote, Ego and Spirituality, The Consciousness of Ego Spiritualism, reflects a lot of the work that we both do. Nick and I have been married for, 34 years now, I think?
and congratulations on that, by the way.
I forget.
I know. What year is it when we got married?
Exactly.
But we've been married a long time, let's put it that way, and learned a lot from each other. And, you know, in the writing of this book and the work that we do is just kind of all merged together so that, you know, we can, you know, get this message out that we feel very important.
You know, right out the gate, when we think of ego, we don't think of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so many discourses out there say that in order to become spiritual, right, in order to traverse this path of enlightenment, we have to release our ego. We have to let it go. Our ego no longer has a place. And so would you really truly clarify that? Because I don't believe that to be the case. Our ego is a part of us, and we're to embrace all aspects of ourselves, but we have to learn how to control it and it not control us. So explain how ego really does have a place in spirituality.
Well, in looking at the workings of the ego and coming to understand it, and listening to what others have been saying about it, what has come into my understanding is that there is a misunderstanding of what ego is fundamentally, and that it's more complex than people often represent it to be. I think the last time I was on your program, we talked about the combination of ego, power, flexibility, and vulnerability that are all part of the egoic energy that goes to work in our life. And that our ego is making its effort, although it doesn't know it's doing this, to try to help us survive and to keep us safe. The problem is when we move away from egoic balance in either of those, any of those three areas, we get into more and more distortion of the person that we become, and we start to live out our lives in the less healthy ways, 10 key life areas that we talk about in our book. Mm-hmm. But it also has an effect upon our spirituality. On the other hand, and I agree with what you're saying, Advij, our ego is a part of us. It's an energy that is a part of our humanity. In fact, we talk about it as the core essence of our humanity. Mm-hmm. And we aren't trying to disown it or defeat it or do anything like that. All we're doing is attempting to, if we're doing any disowning, it's the egoic imbalance that we're living. And if we can bring our ego into balance, then we begin to have the opportunity to move forward in the spiritual sense of things. And I'm going to let Linda continue on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. I feel, and you know, from my work and my understanding, not through what I've learned and come to know as truth within myself, is that we're having this human experience to merge the aspects of who we are together into a divine whole. You know, we are all of God, and, you know, we have that divine essence within us, but we are human as well, and we have the egoic essence within us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt, you know, upon reading and writings that say you have to overcome the ego, you have to, you know, move beyond the ego, that's giving us the message that there's something wrong with us as humans, you know, because...
Exactly.
If we have a component within us that's not good, you know, we're getting this message that we're unworthy or we're not good enough. And, boy, that's the message we're trying to to straighten out so that people can understand you are enough just as you are. Your humanness, your divinity, all of it. It's all part of you. And so, you know, when we can get out of that idea that we can't, as humans, overcome the ego. It is a part of our makeup, and it's understanding the ego. And when we can help it to come into a place of balance, then we're more aware of who we are as human beings, and as human beings having connected to the divine, one with the divine source.
And that's so important. There has to be a balance. Everything must be a balance. And we're here to master self, right? Self-mastery. And so to bring everything into harmony. And so, and we're going to talk about certain personality traits or certain ego personalities, because that's really important in this whole thing too. So just quickly, once again, define exactly what the ego is so that people understand it is a part of who I am, and we must have it. And nothing that is within us is bad. There's nothing. We are not sinners. We weren't cast out of this heavenly place to, you know, repent and work our way back. That's just completely nonsense. And we are divine beings. So every aspect of us is perfect when it's in harmony and balance. So through these lifetimes and incarnations, we've, you know, some things might be imbalanced, and that's okay. That's what this is about. It's learning to bring everything back into harmony, into that homeostasis, and be balanced. And so really clearly define the ego so people understand how it relates to the human, a healthy human. What does ego do?
Okay. What we're broadly saying in part with ego is that it is the core essence of our humanity. It's sort of the core, it's the energy that is the very core of our being. And this energy has a profound effect upon our life. Our life is, in effect, flowing through this energy. This energy shapes our feelings, it shapes our thoughts, it shapes our behaviors, and it even impacts our physiology.
Mm-hmm.
This energy, it's the core center of our personality. It profoundly affects the way our personality is functioning, and depending upon where we are functioning with regard to the power of our ego, the flexibility of our ego, and the vulnerability of our ego, will have an effect upon our life for better or for worse, and often for some people, far worse. The people that we're going to talk maybe later about, such as the racist or the narcissist and so on,
mm-hmm.
As we move further and further from balance and our power becomes too distorted, either in terms of too much or too little, our flexibility is too much or too little, or our vulnerability is too much or too little, a lot of things start happening that are actually more negative. Our ego is trying to help us survive. It's really it thinks its job. It doesn't think, but if it were to think, it would think its purpose is to help us to survive and to keep us safe. And when people are starting to get really carried away with their efforts to survive and they lose concept of their divinity or have no awareness of it, they get into some really radical, dramatic, exotic, distorted, disturbed, pathological ways of living. within their thoughts, within their behaviors and physiology, and even their feelings. And what we're suggesting or trying to talk about is how we can transform and work with our ego through understanding what it is and how it's working in our own life, because each of us has our own distinctive ego, and mm-hmm. that's one of the problems out there that I see is people often refer to it in a generic way, as if everybody's ego is kind of the same or similar, and actually we're very different, just as different as our facial appearance might be. That's the way our egos are. So in an effort to heal and to transform into a better place toward egoic balance, it's important to understand what ego is, as well as our own particular ego, how we're living it, and how we can work to manage it, to bring it into balance and work toward the harmony that you referred to earlier, both humanly and in a divine sense.
Now, then I have a question, because then we understand that ego is this energy. How, then, if we come in, how is that ego developed that it would become imbalanced? Because of outside situations? What's causing the imbalance? Don't we come in perfect, or do we come in with egos, a false ego coming in to this time-space reality? Exactly what goes awry in us to cause us to be, one way or another? Well, does that make sense in that question?
It makes a lot of sense, and it's a very good question. And, we have so many aspects to who we are, and how we move through life. And when we incarnate again, we come back through a channel that we have had. And part of who we have been, personality-wise, egoic-wise, is still reflected there within that channel with the various aspects of who we are. We are not just one physical body, but there are many bodies to us that make up who we are. And the egoic component that we learn in this life is, as Nick said, is about survival. That's what the mm-hmm. ego is about. Okay. And so it's kind of imprinted from many, many, many generations on back, to survive. And depending on whatever environment or situation we're living in, it's going to learn techniques to survive, in that respect as well.
And just following on, I think we can, even in this current life existence, there can be things that occur that have a negative or destructive effect upon that egoic energy. For example, if a person is living in a home that's dysfunctional, and the messages and the teachings and the modeling that's going on are sending messages about what it means to be powerful or not powerful, or how one should think about certain things, we can acquire that. Some people get involved in dysfunctional relationships, abusive relationships. They were egoically pretty healthy people until they got into that particular relationship. And then as a result of the chipping away at their egoic balance by this perhaps partner who's been dysfunctional, they become the victim. They weren't the victim at the beginning of the relationship, but they became the victim over time because of what they experienced in this particular life regarding that relationship that, mm-hmm. in effect, disempowered them and led to their victim status.
So it can really become a part of your personality. I mean, we're just not talking about, it seems like it is, in essence, a part of who you are. It is the personality and will cause you to respond to things, to act a particular way, to just be who your personality.
Absolutely. It's the core essence of your personality. It kind of flows from that. And if something occurs within this current life existence that moves it away from, a healthier balance that one may be in, and it can go the opposite way. People may encounter positive influences that move their ego into balance, away from being imbalanced. So mm-hmm. it can work in both directions. But we can learn a lot of the things through the experiences, life events, important relationships over time that can lead to people having difficulties in these areas.
So before we mentioned certain characteristics or roles as a result of the egoic energy, and some of those that we covered were narcissists, racists, control freaks, the victim, and the religious extremists. Now, according to your work, which of the ego components are emphasized for each of these characteristics or roles? Because we really want to, you know, I think those personalities seem to be the more dominant ones in this age of Aquarius, and we have people who are awakening, who aren't awakening, who they're having issues with religions and how religions are changing. So let's start with the narcissist and what components are emphasized for this particular character.
Well, regarding the narcissist, I would say that the person who is the narcissist often experiences higher ego power. And the more power that they tend to experience, and power is having how much need for control, influence that you have over in within your life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it gets too carried away where the person needs to have absolute control and cannot allow anybody else to do that. Well, in the case of the narcissist, they have really kind of associated love and power as pretty much the same thing. So the more love they get, the more powerful they feel. Mm-hmm. A lot of athletes, a lot of famous people, you've seen them out there in the media, they comment on them, who get kind of intoxicated with the fandom, with the attention, with the adoration, with the love messages, often get into this place of narcissism where they become so embraced and so absorbed with loving and being loved by others that it kind of pumps up their ego, so to speak, and it makes them feel all-powerful. And so a lot of time, and that's hard, you know, that's an example perhaps where the higher ego power is feeding into the development of narcissism.
And now, what would that person – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say these people often are fundamentally good people. They're strong people, intelligent people, but it's just the life experiences. This kind of goes back to the last question you asked. They could transform into away from maybe being a more healthy person into being a less healthy person before they became famous or, you know, somebody special, so to speak. They were quote normal, and then the adoration and fandom and love led them into the direction of being overly entitled, self-absorbed, discounting other people. And as a result, just that became a very entrenched part of their way of looking at the world through the eyes of a higher ego power person.
So then what are they missing spiritually? What's lacking in them? How would you take that sort of person and bring them back into harmony? So,
right. That's definitely necessary. A person in that, you know, living through that, you know, has a sense of false power. They may believe that the power they have is real, but they're living in the illusion through the ego. Mm-hmm. And when anyone's living through it, their ego, through unconsciously, they're unaware that they are one with the whole. They are unaware, you know, they believe that they are this separate person, you know, making their way through life, not understanding that in order to truly be successful and to truly live life harmoniously and in a balanced way, we need to allow ourselves to be that channel for the divine light to shine through. So when somebody is living through their ego and get caught up in that way, in the narcissistic way, they are not realizing that they are one, that we are one. They are living in a sense of separation and kind of, in some ways, closing themselves off from, you know, others close to them, their family, mm-hmm. friends, you know, because of their ideas that I am greater than you. And again, this is the false illusion.
So then we go to the next one, a racist. And, well, that would be a false illusion as well, for sure. But what then?
This is probably an individual who has what I referred to as lower ego flexibility. The person just generally with lower ego flexibility has a very rigid mindset. They have they get locked into just believing things are a certain way about anything. Some people were political extremists. Some people were ethnocentrists. Some people were racist. In the case of the racist, they have developed some very rigid black and white ideas about other members of a particular race. and they aren't able to integrate or take in any of the other inconsistent ideas that don't fit in with the things they want to think about other individuals. And as a result, and sometimes they get there because, well, they've been trained or they've been learned it, but it also may have some reinforcing aspects to it. Discrimination can be very reinforcing. You can get jobs that other people can't get. So if I want to think something about somebody that and think about them as being lesser than, and it entitles me to something more, then that might cement the rigid thinking. But fundamentally, a person is a racist, likes to think certain things, and they are unwilling to kind of integrate other aspects, more reality-based thinking about individuals of another race. And as a result, they're missing a lot, but they don't want to know what they're missing. They just want to hang into and cling on to the things they want to think. A big part about people with lower ego flexibility is they really think they know the truth. They think they know the truth for themselves, and they think they know the truth for everybody else.
Would that be taught? Would a racist, most of the time, is it someone who's taught to not like someone else based on whatever?
I think that's a big part of it. I think that, you know, people, if you're a younger person growing up in a family and people are putting forth messages and ideas, as a child, you don't know what's true or not true. You don't know what things your parents are saying to you are non-reality-based or reality-based. If you're getting a heavy dose and a regular dosage of racistic thoughts, that's your training, that's your education, and in some ways that can become cemented into your mind, into your hard drive, as I would maybe refer to it. It's like a mental virus that the person has that gets established and entrenched. And again, it may have some benefit to them because they get to have opportunities others don't get, or and whatever else, you know, comes to it. But again, fundamentally, it's very much about their locked-in view of reality and rigidness. For example, Archie Bunker, we referred to him in our books because he was a great example of that kind of mentality, that kind of thought process. You probably couldn't talk to this person and help them understand anything. You know, his son-in-law, you know, that he could never reach through him. That was one of the vehicles they were trying to use to show how difficult he would be.
So now, what spiritually would that racist, what would that person be lacking or missing, spiritually speaking?
Well, this sort of thing, you know, overall, there's such a fearfulness here. And, you know, when... You know, all of these things, I think, have, you know, a false illusion, a false idea of what is reality.
Correct.
But the fear is what's, you know, really moving through the person. You know, when they, it's that fear of, ignorance, misunderstanding, not understanding. And again, I think a lot of these things, as you said, are taught because children aren't born to hate. You know, children aren't born in that respect. No living being is. You know, all living beings have that divine love within them, and, you know, their own self-love comes with them. But they are taught to begin to not to love themselves, and therefore, you know, extend that love, you know, that not love out to others. And so, yeah, these are things that are learned. And children, when they learn these things, you know, these things are imprinted within us, and they're very, very difficult to release. Even when we can say, yes, okay, I can see that, I can see the truth, that imprint is still there and when it's been taught to us. Whether, you know, you've been taught that you are unworthy or you've been taught to hate another person, there's an imprint there, and it's very difficult to overcome that. And so the more we can understand about, you know, why it's there, the fearfulness that's underlying this whole thing, and that, you know, we are not separate. Many, many people have such a hard time with the concept of a loving God, because if they're taught to hate another person, they're probably taught that, you know, God is something to be fearful of as well.
Well, and but so many religions are like that because God is a vengeful God, right? And right. God will punish you. And if you don't do it this way, you're going to hell because God's going to see. And so, yes, you know, for how long now have they been using religion as a control mechanism? And so when we have this mean God hanging over us, judging everything we do, then we begin to believe that that is the normal thing to do. I'm going to judge you because God is judging me. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that judgment is coming from an unconscious, imbalanced ego. That's where the devil lives, you know,
yeah.
in our unbalanced ego, an
wow.
ego that teaches us to fear, an ego that teaches us that we're separate.
Let me just add on. I think what you just expressed there, Avij, was the real problem, that religion versus spirituality, that so many people who are religious, they mean well, but they get caught up in some very rigid non-reality-based notions about other human beings, even about God, that
mm-hmm.
don't serve anybody well. And many people over, you know, many wars have been fought over the years in the name of God, which were, just misrepresentations of reality and divinity. That this is kind of what we're speaking to in our work, is this notion of ego spiritualism, that we have to really kind of work with both of those energies in healthy ways to really reach the place where we think people can be in terms of being at peace with themselves, as well as fashioning a world that's more in alignment with who we truly are as human beings, as well as within our divinity.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that it's all about love. And that energy of God, since we're going to talk about God, that energy of God is this pure energy, and it only flows one way, folks. That's love. It's never going to step outside of the space of love. So it's never going to judge. It's never going to hold anything back and away from you. Just like, imagine if you would, you had a child, and this little baby is absolutely adorable. You bring it into the world, and you know, you're changing that diaper, and that baby happens to pee on you, because a little boy will do that, right? You're going to say, oops, hold on, let me go get my notepad, and I'm going to make note of that. And then that little child is two and running around, and you say, now, Johnny, go do this. And he says, no. And you say, Johnny, no, go do this. No. You'll say, okay, hold on, I'm going to go jot that down. And then little Johnny is five, and he does something, and then little Johnny is 12, and you write that down. And now little Johnny is 18. He's, you know, graduated a 4.0 average, and you're really, you know, he's proud, and he's tickled pink that he's done so well. And he says, hey, Mom and Dad, you know, I'm off to college. I got a full scholarship. I need a little help with the down payment for my car to get back and forth. And you'll say, hold on, Johnny. And you go, and you're going to grab that notepad that you've been holding on to now for 18 years. And you're going to say, well, let me look at this. When you were a newborn, you peed on me. When you were two, let's see, you told me no 55 times. When you were five, you did this. And so guess what? You can't have that because you've just been the naughtiest little boy. Would we do that to our child? Absolutely not, I would hope.
Exactly.
And so if we, as loving parents, okay, can understand that that's just growth, and that child experiencing and expressing self, and that we love that child, and knowing that none of those behaviors were actually wrong in any way, how could Great Spirit, Father, Mother, God, think any less of us? It drives me crazy.
Well, you know, just to add on to what you're saying, the third chapter of this latest book is called God is Love, Life, Energy, and You. And the love that goes on in each of those little steps that you were referring to when you worked with that little Johnny, you know, and each of those steps, there was no weight to that love. There was no burden to that love. When you were being the love God is, you enjoyed mm-hmm. each of those moments. And so at 18, you wouldn't pull out the old book there and say, hey, guess what? You know, you owe me, or I don't owe you anything because of any of that hard stuff. There wasn't, there should not have been any weight behind doing any of that along the path of that child's life. Everything that one would have do in benefiting that child was an act of love, or should have hopefully been an act of love.
Exactly. But the point being then that God would never hold anything against us. And so your experiences are your experiences, and if you don't like them, it's because you are the creator of them, not love our loving father, mother would never do that to us. And so people really have to truly understand spirituality, and not so much religion, but spirituality.
And what we state in the book also is that God does not live through an ego.
Thank you.
God is not human. God is, as you said, the energy of love.
Energy. That's
it. Energy of love. That mm-hmm. is God. There is no ego involved. And when you are not living through an ego, you can experience the unconditional love. When you bring your ego into a place of balance and allow it to merge with your divine self, you experience unconditional love. And that is God. And, you know, we are the greatest judges of ourselves. So when we think, you know, there is a judging God, we are working through our unconscious ego. We mm-hmm. are moving through that energy that we hold within ourselves. And that's what's happened in so many religions is, you know, these were man-made ideas and dogmas that were, you know, written and taught through man's understanding of who they are through their ego.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so that's where that all came from. It's really, you know, it's not connecting with the divine source when we do that.
So. Now, the next one that's really important is the victim. And so let's go over that one, but I also want to cover how the victim typically, you know how some people don't want to wake up. They find themselves being drawn to, why me? And they just, as we move through this path, everything is so bitter for them. Everything is so over exploded and over exaggerated because woe is me, and why am I broke, and why don't I have love, and why is this not happening, and why don't I have spiritual gifts, and why can't I see, and why aren't I psychic? I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and on.
Sure.
Please explain that personality.
Well, this is the person with lower ego power. They are more or less the opposite of the person who has too much power. This person has too little power, and they view themselves as helpless. They have gotten to a lot of non-reality-based thinking about themselves, about their abilities, about life and about people. One of the things I think they often do is view all problems as one size large, when in fact many of the problems they deal with are similar to those of others, only they enlarge them through their sense of powerlessness. Now, for some people, they actually in some odd way enjoy the powerlessness because they can escape from responsibility. And they often want maybe others to be responsible for them so that they can be safe. It's an odd form of safety. If I don't do anything, if I don't take any risks, I can't fail.
Because it's not my fault. I try my best, but it's not my fault. It's outside of my circumstances.
Well, that's part of what the ego can have us doing in some, you know, crazy kind of way is to kind of abdicate responsibility for our life. And therefore, if we abdicate that responsibility, we can fail, or we don't have to fail because we're not trying to anything to fail.
To do anything, exactly.
It's the easier way out for some people.
And so that's what makes it, you know, you would think, well, gee, I couldn't live like that, you know, a normal, healthy, functional person. But that's where the victim gets to. That's what I was, you know, speaking about these different characters. It's a unique energy. It's a different energy that person is living within, and it gets entrenched by some of the and in fact that they are in an abusive relationship. And usually, sometimes people with higher ego power, they find themselves with who they look to be their guide, to be their leader, and tell me what to do, tell me what to say. But over time, each little message there says, you can't do this for yourself. Don't trust yourself. Trust other people. Forget about your own capabilities. And then, it erodes. And it may erode over a year or two, maybe three. And then they go from this more functional to this less functional person because they have been taught that they are helpless, and they become helpless.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Spiritually speaking, then, what are they lacking or missing?
Well, they're not understanding the law of the universe, you know, which could greatly benefit them if they understood that what you project out will be reflected back to you. And, you know, again, it is the easier way out. You know, many times we come into this life with a plan, with an idea. Usually we're unconscious of this plan, and mm-hmm. we find ways to live it out. So we may have the experiences that we're having. A person who is a victim is someone who is wanting to take the easy way out, even though at times it's causing them great pain in their life. They're, again, missing, as many of these other personality characteristics that we're talking about, are not understanding that they are one with all, that, you know, they are separate. Life and things happen to me. Why does it always happen to me?
Mm-hmm.
And once they can understand that, when they take responsibility for this and stop sabotaging themselves, because they're great sabotagers, you know, they give up their power, and then they have so much to talk about because there's so much to complain about because they've given themselves away. But when they understand that it's all coming from them, from within them, and they can work on that, they can work on that understanding.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
You know, and I believe, you know, the tools to do this is meditation, beginning to work with meditation and understanding how you can connect with that source within you. And then, you know, seeing, is playing the victim, is it serving you in any way? Coming to understand, you know, many times people get caught up in these roles, if you want to call them that, you know, unconsciously, but they're serving them somehow. They're serving a purpose in their life, whether it's allowing them to, you know, the illusion of, you know, not taking responsibility or whatever it is. But once they can see that, then it can allow them maybe the freedom to step into, you know, that their own power and allow themselves
exactly.
to find their own voice again.
Well, and the first part of all of this is to really recognize that you are living a particular role.
Right.
You know, and well, and I guess then to accept responsibility that you're living that role. But you would have to know what that characteristic or that ego personality is in order for you to do something about it, to change it, wouldn't you
right.
say? Yeah.
Yeah, if you wanted to change it, you know, the person first has to want to change it. They have to understand or, you know, be uncomfortable in their life that they want to make some changes.
So how would they know that they are living this role?
I think that's where we talk about 10 key life areas that are like mirrors to ourselves. And the mirrors, we talk about them in both of our books, but dealing with people in general and then close relationships and self-esteem and more and achievement and other places where, let's say, for example, the victim with regard to achievement might say, I can't achieve. I don't have any potential. I don't have any ability. And you can actually look into those places and see, have you been understanding what a victim looks like? I guess that's more or less what it is. It's almost like, you have to know what that person looks like. What does a narcissist look like? What does a racist look like? It might seem rather obvious to the people from the outside, but sometimes people on the inside maybe have a difficult time seeing it because the ego does a really good job of hiding us from us.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that those 10 key life areas are places where people can look at and see if they are exhibiting some of those qualities, those characteristics that a person who may be living out that personality characteristic or role or being. So it's sort of like looking into the mirror of life, but we're in the mirror of life. Those, again, I talk about 10 key life areas, dealing with change. Like a victim would say, I can't handle change. Change just happens to me. I can't sort of orchestrate the changes or that may occur in my life for the better. And so we talk about different places that the person would, over time, because you can't look at it for 5 minutes and get a, you know, an impression. You would have to be knowing where to look, which is what we try to point out in both of our books, and understand if you were looking and you saw certain things, they would suggest one thing versus another thing in terms of whether you are a, you know, person who is a narcissist or racist or victim or dictator or whomever else we refer to and talk about. And then I think one other part is this notion of reality-based, non-reality-based thinking. The first book we wrote is so long because it really is a very elaborate discussion of the different kinds of non-reality-based thinking that people do get into. And so the victim has their own forms of non-reality-based thinking that they would start to tune into and look at, like I'm not capable of anything, or other ways of expressing thoughts and talking, to self-talk that becomes even more destructive. And so it's like it's tuning into you. And we're trying to talk about where do you go to tune into you? What do you listen for? What are you looking for to see if, in fact, that is? And hopefully you're motivated because you know your life isn't where it needs to be. You know you want more of yourself and the life that you have to live. And so hopefully that is enough of an impetus to put you on step one of the on the road to moving forward.
And so then that would be, how would they know they've really changed? Well, because you actually are living the life that you want?
Yeah, I think you, all of us, I think I can look back at a previous version of myself and look back and see, wow, I really think I have had a chance to grow over time, and I can see differences in myself. For example, in my book, I think I refer to it, I used to be a higher ego vulnerability person. I think I came from a place of lots of anxiety and lots of guilt and lots of stressing about things that maybe I didn't need to stress about. And you see differences in yourself from that person you were, that version of yourself then, as opposed to the version now. And it's something that you're not just thinking it, you know you're living it. You can see you're living the difference. You're not just thinking the difference, because if you're just thinking the difference, nothing has really changed.
Absolutely.
You're feeling it within yourself. You're feeling that truth within yourself, and you have no question any longer. You're not living in fear. You're confident within yourself and know who you are.
Absolutely. Well, we actually only have a few more minutes, and so let's give everyone your contact information, your website, and the name of your books again.
Sure. Thank you very much. You can contact us and learn more about us through our website. And the websites are egoandspirituality.com, lindamartin.net, and theegounmasked.com. And our book is Ego and Spirituality, The Consciousness of Ego Spiritualism. You can purchase it through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and BalboaPress.com.
Wonderful. I want to thank you. Any closing last-minute thoughts while we have about 30 seconds or so?
I think the one thing we didn't say earlier, but the word, the phrase, the term ego spiritualism is really meant to embody that consciousness that reflects an ego imbalance working in harmony with our divinity.
And if you are uncomfortable in your own life, then you can find a better way. You can seek and find the joy, the abundance, and the happiness that you were meant to have.
Absolutely.
Because life was meant to be joyful.
Indeed. I want to thank you, and you guys take care. Be blessed.
Thank you so much, Advij. It was our pleasure.
Thank you, Advij.
Take care. Bye-bye. And so there you have it. It is your divine right to live the life you so desire, with love, with abundance, with health, with happiness. And so, again, each week I bring you someone who can share their knowledge with you, but also remember that affirmationsforliving.net, we have all of those tools available to you as well. Until next time, this has been Affirmations for Living. I am your host, Reverend Dr. Advij. Take care. Bye-bye for now.